The title of Brother Frank's class number two is Rush of the Thief. His introductory reading was Ezekiel 39. Brother Frank.
Well, brothers and sisters, getting back to our talk on Israel and the spoil and Russia the thief. So we need to illustrate why we believe that. And you know, the interesting thing about this, as with Israel, is that this is in the news, February the 23rd. So this is just very recent information. They never expected to see a plane of this caliber show up in Syria. They weren't even too sure that any plane of that caliber was in operation in Russia. So to spot them and to see them there is illustrating that maybe they don't know everything that they ought to about Russia and its preparation for what God has in mind for it. So what we want to do in this class is we want to go back to our roots on this a little bit, because Christadelphians have wavered so much on this theme that we need to be just careful where our roots are. And Ezekiel 38 is about the nation of Russia. Russia will dominate Europe. Russia will unite the image of Daniel too. Russia will covet Israel's possessions. It will be challenged by other nations, and it will meet its fate with the return of Christ. So yeah, you can make a whole talk about Russia. Often we do in our public witness. We actually invite the people of, you know, our neighbors, etc., to come and just listen to what the Bible has to say about this modern nation of Russia. So this is a little bit interesting as well, because it just illustrates what people of the world think. I don't know that this person who wrote this for CNBC News was really a religious person or not, but it's February the 23rd, the same day that these new weapons appeared. And she said, if Russia feels threatened, its reaction could be unpredictable, swift, and massive. The world is less stable and predictable than during the Cold War, EIU experts warn. Moscow's increasing assertiveness and provocative military actions in recent years have alarmed its neighbors in Europe and the wider West. Russia is accused of interfering in the run-ups to the 2016 U.S. election. Last week, 13 Russian individuals and 7 business entities were charged, although Moscow has denied involvement. We know how that story just won't leave. It keeps on sort of festering in the background. Maybe one day we'll find out exactly what Russia did. And it will be interesting then to see the truth after so many months of information about it. But our roots don't lie in what the news says. Now, this is a very important point, because to take in the news today, you really got to give some time and attention to it. Like, if you're interested in what Russia's doing, you're interested in what's happening in Israel, then you sort of develop this spirit, like, I'd like to know anything and everything I can. Well, I tell you, just keep track of the time it takes to do that, and you'll find it's taking quality time. It's taken time we really don't have, but it's all in the purpose of trying to figure out what's going on in the world. I think we'd be better off, brothers and sisters, just to rely on what the Bible has to say about it and let those things take care of themselves. We have more important things to think about and to sort out than to be a spectator of what's happening at this level. But when we read what the scriptures say, there's no doubt about the sons of Japheth, and it mentions Gomer, Magog, Tubal, and Meshech. It mentions Togarma. It mentions Tarshish. And all of these nations, or these descendants of Japheth, which are mentioned again in Ezekiel. Well, this is thousands of years later from the time of when those nations came out of the ark and were established in the area. So we just have to admire the wisdom of God of being able to track something because of what is recorded, which, you know, we might think, well, why would anyone need to know that? Like, we need to know he had three sons. We need to know that, you know, the world was populated by those three sons. But do we actually need to know the names of them? Well, that becomes the strength of our witness to know the names. So we see those names on maps not written by Christadelphians. These are just maps with people trying to figure out where they went. And as far as history is concerned, you start to see them. You know, there's Gog, and there's Magog, and here's Tubal, here's Togarma. You start to see these nations which are mentioned in Genesis 10 showing up on maps. And the important thing is, so this is not written by Christadelphians. Like, this is what other people looking at the same information have had to say about it. In this case, Rand McNally. Well, when we come much later in history to read what the prophet Ezekiel had to say, always saying this to start with, the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Son of man, set thy face against Gog, the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, and prophesy against him. Now, that's what we had to work with. I remember, you know, sort of many, many years ago, working with these things to give, you know, a public lecture for the Ecclesia, and think, well, where would I go for good, sound information that I can get, that I can be reasonably sure myself of these things? So you had to do some work on this. Like, it doesn't say Russia. So how do you make Russia out of what you see? Well, if you go to other versions, and the RV has been around for quite some time, it says, Son of man, set thy face toward Gog of the land of Magog, the prince of Rosh, Meshech, and Tubal, and prophesy against him. Now, most of us, certainly the people that I knew of, learned that from earlier Christadelphian writers that were able to point that out. That this word, which is the word chief, is translated Rosh in the RV and picked up that way in many more recent translations. So, yeah, it appears to be there, and we have to always remember that what we're reading in the English is not the original language, and many, many of the controversies that we have based on words, you need to get under another layer down below to find out what the Greek and the Hebrew had to say. And if we're not Greek and Hebrew scholars, well, there's books around, there's lexicons. We're not left alone in this. So looking at the Amplified Bible, a commentary that's right in the book, it says this, Gog is a symbolic name standing for the leader of the world powers antagonistic to God. Meshech and Tubal are understood to have been the same as the Mashi and Tabareni of the Greeks, tribes that inhabited regions in the Caucasus. Rosh, which some would identify with Russia, must have designated a land and people somewhere in the same quarter. Therefore, the Gog of Ezekiel must be viewed in some sense the head of the high regions of the northwest of Asia. And that's from Fairbairn's Imperial Standard Bible Encyclopedia. So people were investigating it, and those who saw this had written this. And long before Christadelphians had seen this, this was being seen by other people. Again, it went on to say, quoting another author, Gesenius, observes that it can scarcely be doubtful that the first trace of the Russians is here given from Lange's commentary. And then Hengstenberg could not bear to see the poor Russians ranged among the enemies of the kingdom of God. But the one who gave Ezekiel this vision of what was to happen in the latter days, verse 16, made no mistake in such a forecast as all the world can see today. Now, that's the way it's written up by other people. So you have to get your roots into this. Because, and primarily, as I see it, because when the Soviet Union collapsed, you remember the Berlin Wall went down, those of you can remember it, the Berlin Wall went down, the Soviet Union collapsed, the Warsaw Pact collapsed, and for a while their Bible students were just wondering, whatever is happening? Like, have we been off track on this? Because we always believed the Soviet Union were, with all these weapons that they were testing in the 50s, this was what we were going to see Europe come together under the threat or under the force of that. So it was always important to get these things in your mind so that you yourself were convinced of this. You're going to get on a platform and tell other people. And when the Soviet Union collapsed, some brethren gave up on Russia. So we've been wrong. It's not Russia. It must be the Arab countries. And books were written in Christadelphia about how it was the Arabs that were really what this was talking about. It wasn't Russia at all. Well, a lot of those people haven't seen the information that we see today, so we'll go on. So this is Elpis Israel, 1848. And even Elpis Israel, in John Thomas's writings, he doesn't claim that he is the source of this. He claims other people. So he says, what nations are signified by these three proper names? This question has long since been determined by the learned. The celebrated Bocard about the year 1640 observed in his elaborate researches into sacred geography that Rus, the most ancient form under which history makes mention of the name Russia, and he contended that Rus and Mosk properly denote the nations of Russia and Muscovy. It is credible, says he, that the Rus and Meshek, that is the Rossi and Mashi of whom Ezekiel speaks, descended the Russians and the Muscovites, nations of the greatest celebrity in European Scythia. So these are writers going back, you know, 300 years, going on almost 400 years now. Again, we have indeed ample and positive testimony that the Russian nation was called Rus by the Greeks in the earliest period in which we find it mentioned. The Rus are a Scythian nation bordering on the northern Taurus, and their own historians say it is related that the Russians, whom the Greeks call Rus and sometimes Rosos, derived their name from Rus, a valiant man who delivered his nation from the yoke of their Taurus. Now, we can't be sure that that's true or not true, but it is interesting to see how that many people wrestled with the same scripture passage, and a lot of people thought it was Russia, and including John Thomas. In Ezekiel 38, verses 1 and 2, it says, set thy face against Gog, the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, and prophesy against him. Now, there's been some really significant things happen in Russia. Like a lot of the things that you see in Israel, like these churches and that you see there, were built prior to 1917. You wouldn't expect the Soviet Union to build churches in Israel. They were breaking down churches in the Soviet Union. They were changing them into museums or whatever they could, but they weren't in favor of churches at all. And for those of us who at that time were just sort of getting our wind in prophecy, we were seeing this nation, which was appeared to be a very violent nation, with the determination to crush all the West as best they could, as soon as they could, developing these huge weapons. And that was in the 50s. But if we just follow it through here, 1917 for the Russians was a major event. That the Bolshevik Revolution, when the old form of government was thrown off, and the new form of government, the godless form of government of the Soviet Union came into place. Some of you may remember 1957, Americans should, because the Americans were the ones that were absolutely so amazed at what happened in 1957. Imagine a little satellite going over your country, which is Russian. We don't mind that anymore. I mean, there's hundreds of them up there, and they're all countries of the world. But when the first one went up, it was Russian, not American, and it flew right over America, and they were obsessed to build up and to pass Russia in the studies and in the advances of science. So in 1969, the Americans landed on the moon, and they certainly got their act together at that time. Well, in 1989, which is when the Berlin Wall went down, and the Soviet Union, the demise of the Soviet Union was shortly afterwards, that was the mark of that year. In the year 2000 is when Putin first came to the forefront of the Soviet, or of now of the Russian Federation. He's been around a long time, and he's looking for another 6 years, which he hopes he will win later on this month in an election in Russia. So this man, Putin, is really quite a significant feature of what's happening in Russia. 2014, Crimea, and how the Russians moved into Crimea and took it off the Ukraine. In 2015, Russia established a base in Syria. In 2017, they're on the borders of Israel. Now, the significant thing about that to us, brothers and sisters, is there have been generations of people who didn't even know that it was Russia. And when people found out it was Russia, well, Russia wasn't doing anything in the Middle East. But for us, we've seen them come from Russia right down onto the borders of Israel in just the last couple of years. If that doesn't make the hair on your spine stand up a little bit, boy, I don't know what it would take to do it. I mean, that's just how close we are to all these events happening before our eyes. There's the man. That's the way he likes to be introduced. You can sure see that what God says about the carnal mind, it's active whenever there is power of that level. I want to show you this. I think this is really quite something. The Bible has said, and this is the chapter we read, I will turn you about and drive you forward and bring you up from the uttermost parts of the north and lead you against the mountains of Israel. Now that's a real important sign to identify Russia. There is no other country in the world that has set its flag on the North Pole. Russia has. Well, the North Pole's underwater. So they sent a sub down and they place it on the ground where they feel the North Pole was. That's the picture of it being established there. So Russia declares they own the uttermost parts of the North. That's what the prophecy said. But look at where else this goes to. From the uttermost parts of the North. And I want you to look at this chart. If you want to copy it down, you can, but I could give it to you on a slideshow here. If you look at these cities, and you look at longitude and latitude, now you've got to follow longitude to see the uttermost parts of the North. Latitude just illustrates another issue of it. So I've showed St. Petersburg, Moscow, Sevastopol in Crimea, Ankara in Turkey, Latakia in Syria, Beirut, Lebanon, Tel Aviv, Israel, Jerusalem, Israel. If you drew a line from Jerusalem, went straight north, you'd come to the North Pole. Well, Russia claims to own the North Pole. But that line comes right between St. Petersburg and Moscow, very, very important cities in the history of Russia. And then it just so happens that they went into this place recently and took this place off of the Ukraine, Crimea, which is almost right on that line that goes down to Jerusalem. They've been working in Ankara. They've tried to turn the Turks away from NATO to win them over, and they're doing it with oil and with the kind of treaties they make with nations today. They're now in Latakia in Syria, which is another nation right on that line. Beirut looks like it's next. They're trying to get into Beirut, Lebanon, then Tel Aviv, then Jerusalem. Now just look at the latitude. You know, we've got North Pole, that's right at the top. Then 60 degrees north, 55, 45, 40, 35, 33, 32, 31. You can see that the movement in these last issues from the latitude is very close at hand. Now, that means nothing to people who aren't Bible students. But when you're a Bible student and you see the Bible saying they come from the uttermost parts of the north more than once in the same prophecy, and you see that it seems to apply to Togarma as well, and Turkey's right on that northern path, you can see what God's trying to tell a person who's applying themselves to God's word. These are the kind of things that make us ready. Now, there's a chart that comes back from the 60s. That's what we believed in the 60s. That's what we were making in charts. People were making these charts all around. I visited various places where people had made charts on this. This was just one of them. The whole idea was we're going to develop as Israel. The nations would, Russia, they would move down into Egypt. They would go into Israel. Armageddon would happen in Israel. and the nations about it are, so, you know, the nations that we talk about, we talked about the return of the Jews, we talk about the breakup of the Western world, we talk about Russia advances to world conquest, you know, with a few little mentions about the Reds and the communists, but, you know, a few things would need to be changed there to be current today, but that's basically what we had to say, and then, of course, Christ's coming. So the Christadelphians really haven't changed their witness on this, going back to the days of Elpasrael to our present day. We have no reason to change it. In a world that is just changing, 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 Bible prophecy keeps us stable. This is what the Bible prophecy said. This is what we expect to see. But there's no reason for us to spend hours and hours and hours looking at it like we're a spectator that really needs to be entertained by it. That's not a very valuable use of time. I don't know if you know those two brethren. Some of you would recognize those two brethren. Brother Maury Stewart, Brother Purse Mansfield. Now, those two brethren were tutors of people in this room, I'm sure. Their brethren learned what to say from brethren who were saying it in their day, saying it very well. Like Maury Stewart, this was his TV program. That was the stage he had. This is your Bible. Week in, week out, or he was on that stage. Not in between the week, I just meant on the one time during the week. He had that daily show, and then a purse would come on, and it was interesting the relationship those two brethren had, because I happened to be with them. I took this picture, so I was with them that day. And Maury Stewart wouldn't tell Purse what he was going to talk about. He just says, well, you'll find out. You know, and that's the way Purse was with him too. Like they didn't really need to have a whole lot of preparation. So Purse found out what Maury had as for questions for him. You're my guest today. Would you please tell the audience that he's all on television? He's never even been told what the question's going to be. But very capable brethren who knew their Bibles, knew the Bible prophecy. And with that backdrop, there's no doubt about what you're going to talk about. So it was really interesting. That was our 70s. In the 21st century, we got some better artwork because we were able to, you know, use computers, but we really haven't changed. We were able to, you know, put on flags. This chart was used in public. One of the places it was used in a park in London, Ontario. And the brethren went down. There was several brethren that participated in this. Every brother had a flag. So there was a flag stand, and all those flags were in the stand. And then one by one, they came out on stage and said, okay, this is what the Bible has to say about Russia. This is what the Bible has to say about Turkey, about France, Germany. And those flags are only there because we had something to say about it. And I think people, you know, just stood around to see what their nation was going to do based on what we thought from the Bible. It's an interesting idea, but it came from the Yad Vashem in Jerusalem. If you went to the Yad Vashem, the way they have tried to deal with history is to, you walk into the place and they have nations. So you have Germany, you have Poland, you have Czechoslovakia, you have this nation, that nation. And so people who come in there, I'm Polish. I want to go to see what happened in Poland. You go in there and you see the Holocaust of what it meant, what happened in Poland. I thought that was an interesting thing because people naturally went where their flag was displayed. And so we found, too, that people were quite interested by waiting for their flag to show up. And what were people going to say about Britain? What were they going to say about Australia or Canada? Now, there isn't much you can say in some cases. But you could link it by saying, this is where we believe it comes from. And this chart was there on stage so they could come and see it. Just an interesting way of how to get the message out. Our message hasn't changed. Now, it is interesting how the Bible speaks of Russia allied in some way with Western Europe. We really struggled over this for the years in the 50s. When they were testing these huge, 100, I don't know if they ever tested a 100 megaton bomb. That would be amazingly big. But they were so big that the idea was that they now could destroy life on Earth. he had enough weapons they could destroy all life. How anybody would ever want to have that many weapons, you don't know, and why they would ever do it. So we always thought that Europe would either be conquered or it would be intimidated into joining Russia. And we didn't really have much else to work on. And I want to show you how that has developed since. So this man, Emmanuel Macron of France, he is a young man now that's come to the stage and has put a new face on France for the world community. And the Bible says in Ezekiel 38, verse 6, that Gomer and all his plans, his bands in the house of Dagarma of the North Quarters and all his bands and many people with it. Well, you know, if you looked at this old map, it says the descendants of Gomer occupied probably Germany, France, the British Isles, and everything. So people didn't really know. They knew that these sons of Japheth went up into the area, but they really couldn't tell precisely where they went. So the boundaries of Germany and of France, of Czechoslovakia, etc., Poland, really don't relate to the prophecy that exactly. But you could say that generally they were there, and how those tribes mixed in later years, we don't really know. So we read and see what these people having to say. We just believe that Europe will be united with Russia. And I thought one of the interesting things is we just had a chance to go through France on one of the trips with Paul Billington. And remembering that in the six vials, or the sixth vial in Revelation 16, it says, I saw three unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. They are the spirits of devils working miracles which go forth unto the kings of the earth and of the whole world to gather them to the battle of that great day of God Almighty. Now, if you've read that in Elpis Israel, you really have to sort of believe it or go and visit and believe from the point of view. I've seen it myself. Because he claimed there was tapestry in this a cathedral in Europe where you could see that the frog symbol was rightly identified with France. Well, we did have the opportunity to go there and try to see, you know, the birth of liberty, equality, fraternity. There's the cathedral, Reims, France. The claim was that this was one of the first Christian kings in Europe, in France, and that when he went out to battle, he went out to battle with a shield with frogs on it. And that's how you can identify in Revelation 16 that the frogs really are the French. Well, you can see the little people down here. This is some magnificent structure to be that old, of how they ever managed to build something like that. And inside is just unique. It must have taken millions of dollars. I don't know what they would have been in those days, but in our days, certainly hundreds of millions of dollars to build something like that today. But we came and we just happened to land on the 1500th anniversary of this king of France. Now, I don't know any French, so I thought his name was Leroy. Leroy Clovis. But those of you who know a bit of France, or French rather, would know that that's referring to the king. The King Clovis. Look what he's wearing. And this was their banner right on the front door of this cathedral, because it's in there. So we had a great time going down into the bottom part underground in the cathedral and seeing all these charts. They're all woven, like woven rugs, all beautiful tapestry and preserved very well for the age they are. Yeah, you could see that picture on the tapestry. So I don't know if John Thomas ever actually did see it himself, but the information that he gave is proper. God says in Ezekiel 38 to the prophet Ezekiel that I will turn thee back, put hooks into thy jaws, and I will bring thee forth. And then he goes on to talk about the nations that will be with them, Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya. Now, if you go to the ESV, and just, you know, it's a good idea today, not that, you know, you can go to any one of these versions and say, well, they're the accurate version. I know what we all tend to do. We want it to say something. We find the version that says it, and we use that version. So it's not really a good idea to do that. but the ESV is probably a good monitor of the wording of the King James, just to see what they have to say. So he says, I will turn you about, I will put hooks into your jaws, and I will bring you out and all your army. Well, if you put hooks in the jaws of some person, they were taken captive. Okay, they were being led. If you had a hook in your jaw, you would do, or whatever that rope went, you would go, or otherwise it would be very, very painful. And so God says, that's what I'm going to do with Gog. So we say, well, when did he do this? Has he done it yet? Well, you might just think of how Putin thinks about what happened to the former Soviet Union. That's a thorn in his side. And he often speaks about the fact that, you know, never again what happened to the Soviet Union and the great embarrassment to the Russians to have to admit that the government's over, the Warsaw Pact's gone, we've lost all our associates. And if that's the case, well, I'll tell you, that would be a good example of God turning them about from the Soviet Union and the godlessness of the Soviet Union to a form of godliness, which is so manifest in Russia today. And God brings them as captives. They're coming to do something for me in the Middle East. And it just seems that's the way they're going. Like, why do the Russians move in like this? How can they move in like that in this world? Well, I think that's the reason. God says, I will do it. And when you see God saying something, it doesn't matter what nations do. God's doing it. He says they're going to be a guard. Be prepared, prepare for yourself and all thy company that are assembled unto thee, and be thou a guard unto them. Well, what does the word guard mean? Well, there's your alternatives in the Briggs driver Brown or Brown driver Briggs lexicon. A place of confinement, prison, guard, jail, guard, post, watch, jail, prison. It's all something like, not just, you know, I'm just going to be defending you, but that you're coming with me. We're doing this thing together. So we got to see Russia in that capacity if we're rightly identified it. The Russia is going to work with these people that they don't have any choice. They're captured by Russia. I want you to see that as we go through this. Now, this is Putin's bold speech. This is March 1st. Now, some of you might remember that, because this is, you're going to have a real problem with your memory if you can't remember this one. It just happened the other day. So he said, a lot of other things he said, we will interpret any use of nuclear weapons, because the Americans are saying they're going to work on small tactical nuclear weapons to avoid a nuclear war where people send weapons across so big, you know, whole cities are gone with one bang. So he says, we will interpret any use of nuclear weapons against Russia and its allies, no matter how powerful they are, and of low, medium, or any other yield, as a nuclear attack, and it will trigger an immediate answer with all the consequences stemming from it. No one should have any doubts about it. He said that Russian military experts and diplomats will be ready to discuss new weapon systems with their U.S. counterparts. We aren't threatening anybody. We aren't going to attack anyone. We aren't going to take anything from anyone, he said. The growing Russian military power will be a guarantee of global peace. Well, that last statement is really significant. I think if you're ever going to give a lecture on Russia, you want to make sure you got that. They have a vision of being so powerful that no nation would dare wrestle. Well, they used to say mess with Texas. This is mess with Russia. You don't mess with Russia because we're too powerful for it. And that means we'll guarantee peace. See, we don't know why Russia comes down and what they will sort of fool other nations with when they say this is why we're coming down into the Middle East. But this is really quite an interesting idea. However, Europe needs Russia. And I think this is where the idea of the guard, like gotcha, you can't leave. Because when you look at these gas lines that are running from Russia into Europe, isn't it fascinating that with all the distribution of oil fields all around the world, there's hardly any in Europe. Europe's dependent upon some other nation for their energy. And the nation which they have chosen, for one reason or another, is Russia. So they're building this North Stream, and it's still under construction, but it's going right to Germany. And Germany seems to be acknowledging, yeah, we're going to be dependent on Russia. We got so much of our energy coming from Russia, we'll be dependent upon it. And you can see how they're building in other lines, or have built other lines into Europe, because that's where not only they can sell their product, but they can gain control. How can they gain control? Well, look at this. The European gas market. Now, in terms of the world market, you got North America, Central America, you got Europe, former Soviet Union, Middle East, Africa, Asia. That's what they need. Well, that's a pretty big chunk of what they need. And they're close enough that they don't have to ship it by liquefying natural gas, putting it into a ship and taking it somewhere in the world, which the Americans have to do if they want to sell liquid petroleum into Europe. So if they can build gas lines to them, it seems like everybody is happier. But just remember that much, that this is trillion cubic feet. So we're talking a pretty big amount of gas that has to go to run the energy of Europe. But this also is come up. And with this World Energy Report, Sources Statistical Review of World Energy, 2017. Instances of Russian energy coercion in Europe and the former Soviet zone. The Kremlin's use of energy coercion began even before the USSR actually dissolved in December 1991. For instance, it interrupted oil supplies to the Baltic states in 1990 in an effort to crush the region's budding independence movements, although to no avail. Russian energy companies, presumably with the Kremlin's blessing, have all gone to make up multiple attempts over the past 25 years to use energy supplies to gain leverage over Russia's neighbors and advance Moscow's strategic priorities. You think Europe's not aware of this? You think they don't know they're becoming more and more dependent on Russia by building these pipelines? The author has identified at least 15 discrete instances where Russian entities use price and physical volume manipulation of crude oil or natural gas supplies, often amidst political tensions, to pressure consumers located in Central and Eastern Europe and the former Soviet countries. Like, they document this. And the pipeline still gets built. And they still get dependent upon Russia. Those kind of things you really wonder at. I think that's a measure of God leading this nation to do what it has to do. And these things have to be built. Those kinds of relationships between nations have to be established for Russia to have the control over Europe, for God's will to be done. Is Russia and Persia together? Well, it is. As Jesus said, you know them by their fruits. You look at what's happening, and you can tell whether there is any working between those two nations together. But Persia has to be in the control of Russia. Ethiopia, yeah, they're working on a big dam in Ethiopia, but Russia is signing them up to nuclear power at the same time. How Russia can do this, we don't know. Like, it would seem that wouldn't they just be developing their own power with this big dam they have? Why would they need, nuclear power at the same time? Well, they did that this year. Ethiopia is with them. And then European unity turns to Russia to go to see if they can control the people that are coming out as refugees out of Libya into Europe, because they don't know how to do it. They got so many of these refugees, they want to stop it. So they've asked Putin to do it. And so Libya has to be one of the nations. Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya. Before our eyes, in just the last couple of years, brothers and sisters, I mean, the acceleration of the pace of Bible prophecy seems to be getting to a real strategic level. Russia the thief, to take a spoil, to take a prey, to turn thine hand upon the desolate places that are now inhabited. Well, we go back to these oil rigs. Now, this is an interesting thing, because if Russia thinks they can corral Europe, America seems to be trying to provide a means to offset that, so they're not so reliant on Russia. They can be reliant on liquid petroleum gas shipped to there from America. But this, what's happening in the Eastern Mediterranean, is a game changer, because this is the what happened in Tamar, the field off the coast of Israel. This is the Leviathan. This is under the Golan Heights and in Jerusalem. I'll show you a little bit more on that in a minute. And now they're digging for another one in the plain of Jezreel. And they have found oil, but as I say, they haven't announced how much. So looking at, again, this comes from Don Pierce's snippets files. Israel is set to shake up the energy landscape in the Middle East like no one has ever seen before. Last week, this is June 30th, back in 2012, it says they discovered an offshore gas field with an estimated 1.4 billion barrels of oil, 6.7 trillion cubic of feet of natural gas. According to the company's chairman, Ronnie Hallman, the quantity of gas discovered makes it the third largest offshore discovery to date. But that was just to date, 2012. Then it follows last June's announcement of uncovering 16 trillion cubic feet of natural gas and 800 million barrels of oil in Israel's Tamar and Leviathan offshore fields. Yet for Israel, these discoveries are only the beginning, and investors should pay close attention. That's because, now listen to this, Israel's largest oil and gas opportunities aren't offshore. They're on land in the nation's shale deposits. As the Wall Street Journal reports, the World Energy Council estimates Israel's shale deposits, located some 30 miles southwest of Jerusalem, could ultimately yield as many as 250 billion barrels of oil. To put this in perspective, Israel could soon be the world's third largest nation in terms of proven oil reserves behind Venezuela, which took top spot last year in Saudi Arabia. To get an idea of the scope of these massive reserves, it would potentially be enough to cover the United States' entire oil needs for the next 20, 35 years. That's on land. Now, whatever they're finding in the eastern end of the Mediterranean off the seacoast is one thing. But to find this amount of oil at this date in history, it's got to be remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. For us as Christadelphians, waiting all these years with no oil in Israel, no gas in Israel, and there was nothing to see. And now just in this, you know, since 2012, they've discovered so much of this that Israel now is a huge deposit of oil and gas, rivaling the world's top places. Why has God placed so much gas and oil right in Israel, and why is it not being discovered until today? That's remarkable. The plan of God is accelerating onwards. Jerusalem Post, in December 2017. The declaration gave strong support to the establishment of what is being designated the East Med Pipeline, namely another gas corridor directly linking gas findings in the Cyprus and Israeli EEZs with the European markets. From far from establishing an exclusive three-nation club, the political leaders emphasized that they were ready to welcome other like-minded countries to join in promoting coordination and cooperation, regional peace and stability. A first step in that direction was the establishment of a quadrilateral working group, Greece, Cyprus, Israel and Italy, aimed at closely monitoring and supporting the EastMed project as an export route for natural gas from the Eastern Mediterranean to Europe. That's Russia's area. They don't want this gas, unless it's Gazprom that's doing it, and Gazprom is being shut out of this venture. You can just see how this is going to be a spoil. Now, Russia really wants to control Europe. And they ever get to starting to build this pipeline, that's a threat to Russia's supply and control over Europe. So we see this. I really thank Brother Don Pierce's work on this. Like, I mean, that's a labor of love. It must take him hours and hours and hours to go through the news and to actually locate news things that Christadelphians would be interested in. It's the most valuable use of our time, the search that I can think of, is just reading that file, because he always gives you where it comes from. But it's a labor of love for people who wanna know. Now look at this. If you remember the justification that Putin gave for his mercenaries to go into the Ukraine or into Crimea and take over the Crimea, it was because there's so many Russians here. Like, we're trying to defend the Russians that are here. Well, look at this. Here is a manhole cover in Tel Aviv. Can you recognize the languages? So the people that work on this manhole cover have to know the language. So it's written in English, it's written in Hebrew, it's written in Arabic, and it's written in Russian. The last Soviet census in 1989 indicated about 1.5 million Jews living in the country, of which about 877,000 had moved to Israel by October 2000. So that wasn't very long. The wave of immigration in this short period of time was the greatest influx of people to Israel since the date of its creation. Immigrants from the former Soviet Union composed 50% to 70% of the newcomers. Do you think that God saw that Israel needed a group of Russian-speaking people to be there to entice Russia to come down? And so that they didn't really know why they came, and they were going to ask at some time in history, have you come to take a spoil? Like, could you see the misinformation, the false information that might lead people to understand why they really came down to take Israel? That would be one of them. The challenge to Russia, of course, the Sixth Fleet. Sheba, Dedan, the merchants of Tarshish. But when they say, "Art you come to take a spoil, and you've gathered our company to take a prey," it doesn't sound like real opposition, but it's querying something that they'd be given information, and it doesn't seem to be the right information. It's not like what we're finding as the fruit on the tree. So in December 25th, 1991, Soviet Union transformed into the Russian Federation. You might remember this name, Mikhail Gorbachev and Boris Yeltsin. And if any of you didn't remember, this man was just so different than any other Russian leader. To hear him speak and to get the ideas that he had, it was just unbelievable. And I think however we might understand God turning them around, putting hooks in their jaws and bringing them on, in my mind, that's probably the greatest candidate. What happened in that transfer of power from the Soviet Union to the Russian Federation. I will turn thee back, put hooks into thy jaws, and bring thee forth, all thine army, horses and horsemen, all of them clothed with all sorts of armor, a great company with bucklers and shields, all of them handling swords. So we go back to this land, and I want to show you another dimension to this whole thing. Like, there's a lot of dimensions to Russia. You might know what of an article that was written in the National Geographic some years ago where it talked about the Third Rome. Okay, so there was a Rome here in Italy. There was a Rome here in Istanbul. And now there's a Rome in Moscow, which must be up here somewhere. That was the Third Rome. Why would they ever call Moscow the Third Rome? What was religious about Moscow? We didn't see any religion at all in Moscow in the times of the former Soviet Union. But now, it's changed completely. This is probably one of the biggest reasons for the change, because the Russians saw how this man, the leader of the Roman Catholic Church, was able to sway the Polish people to overthrow, not that they had to do it violently, but to overthrow their government. And he could see how these people, with their bishops and their priests and all these various levels of society, had control of the people. And it was a stabilizing effect. They didn't have to go to war. And I think they learned a lot about that. Well, this place, during the Soviet Union, was a museum. Now it's back to being a cathedral in St. Petersburg. Pretty fancy-looking piece. When you look at how it's been all fixed up since Putin's years. Look at this one in Moscow. That was in ruins in the Soviet Union. But now, in the year 2000, it was transformed into a place of beauty and attraction. Why would this happen? Why would they do this? Here's another one, Russian Orthodox in Moscow, again. And look at the attraction that would have to people who want to go there to see the religion of these people. And again, we want to just point out that when you look at a picture of Jerusalem, there's the Church of Mary Magdalene, which was built by Tsar Alexander III in 1888. And up the top here is the what's called the Russian Orthodox Church of the Ascension, built on the Mount of Olives, dominating it, and it was raised in 1870 rather, to a particular height, so that people could see the Jordan without having to go down to the river. Kind of an interesting thing, but I wouldn't have never known that if it hadn't been that Dorothy and I, for an anniversary, thought we'd go to Israel. We go to Jerusalem, and we just have a look around. And I really would advise any of you who are adventuring some spirit like that, it's wonderful to go with Jim Cowie, and because Jim Cowie would give you a wonderful trip through Israel. But I tell you, if you really are interested, you'll probably go to places that Jim wouldn't take it. He wouldn't take it to these churches. I wanted to go to those churches. I wanted to see what they do there. Wanted to see how it is that, like, we went to the Basilica in Rome, where the Vatican is, and I wanted to see this thing that people kiss. And yeah, they were. Here's this, looked like a copper image of a man, supposedly Peter, and I guess he would be about that much. His feet were about that high, and the rest of them went up there, and people were coming along and kissing his toes. Other people were rubbing their hands over his toes. I thought, boy, those two combinations should be a lot of dead people in a short time. But they didn't seem to mind. They're in a place where you don't get a chance to do this. Well, the same thing in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. You go in there, and there's a stone, and people come in, bow down, and kiss the stone. Why would they kiss that stone? Because they're made believe that that's where Jesus' body was wound up before it was put into the tomb, which is just close by in their reckoning. People come in and kiss that stone. I tell you, these churches and that tell you an aspect of life that sometimes is needful. You start to see who are the stakeholders in this city. Why is this city so attractive to the nations of the world? So Putin and his Christian connections. Now, we don't see him often in this, but if you do a little research into Putin's statements that he's made, you would find this. He's continuing in his remarks. Putin stated that he has championed Russian laws that essentially outlawed abortion in Russia. Abortion? Putin has outlawed abortion in Russia? No. No abortions after the 12th week and before that time in limited cases, and also at the end of financial support for abortions, reversing our previous Soviet policy. Strongly supports traditional marriage, especially religious marriage, with financial aid to married couples having more than two children. Established compulsory religious instruction in all Russian schools. Made religious holidays now official Russian state holidays. And instituted a nationwide program of rebuilding churches that were destroyed by the communists, the most notable being the historic Church of Christ the Savior in Moscow. The Third Rome. Now, sometime you may see, I expect we may see, that Russia will make a move on Istanbul and reclaim that city for their own. How they would do it, I don't know. But looking at the man, Erdogan, running Turkey, who is an unpredictable person in his own right, it just stands that in today's world that could happen. So I want to just finish this up with showing you this map. Now, y'all recognize that map, wouldn't you? And this point that I'm making here probably would have been more impressive maybe 3 years ago, because we get used to the news now and it's not so impressive. But if you look at this and you see the Euphrates River here, and you remember that that's one of the boundaries of the promises to Abraham, and that this sea is a boundary of the promise to Abraham, and that you would expect it would go down to here as the promise to Abraham, and who knows just how far it may and the south go also to the east. So this is affecting nations Turkey, Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and possibly Egypt. If that is roughly the range of the land, you can see that one of the things you can see is that Russia is already there. If we're waiting for Russia to enter the land, the promised land, they're already there. Russia's military already in the land of promise, where they have this sea base here and now air bases in that area. And you can just see how God's focusing the world on this area of the land and the nations that are involved. The things that are happening in Saudi Arabia with respect to Israel are just astounding. We'd never have thought these just a couple of years ago, of how Israel and Saudi Arabia are planning to work together, how Egypt and Israel are working together, how Jordan and Israel are working together. That would never have been thought of when we were doing our first charts and that back in the earlier days. So this just gives you an idea of a Russian basis. But Russia, Putin, has said, we're getting out of it. We're leaving. We've won. The victory is ours. We're sending the troops home. I wonder, because in February the 1st, there was a headline in Debka that said, Russia is building 4 new air bases in Syria, deploying another 6,000 troops. Contrary to promises, the Russian military is not pulling out of Syria, but adding 4 more air bases, one shared with Iran, and 6,000 more troops. So this was the declaration on December 11th. He says, just try to read maybe the, I don't know, we need to read all those names, but most of the 6,000 additional Russian military personnel are all Air Force and Special Operations personnel. Now, he said here that this airport provides air support for operations in the eastern Syria, including the Deir el-Zur, or Zur, rather, province, which Moscow has agreed to share with Iran. Now, you know how that's a flashpoint for Americans, and how the Americans actually engaged in battle with the Russians, which is claimed to be a mercenary force, and the Iranians. They were trying to build a bridge over the Euphrates River. And the Americans knew that. They warned Russia that they don't do this, and they did it anyway, and the Americans destroyed the whole idea. They destroyed the bridge, they destroyed the people that were there, and we don't know what the payback for that will be, but those new fighter planes that appeared in Syria, maybe one of them. So they will be destroyed in Israel. Now this is very, very interesting. What did God actually say? Well, he said, I will rain upon him and upon his hordes and upon the many people that are with him, an overflowing shower, great hailstones, fire and brimstone. That's what God says he would bring upon these people. And I just wanted to illustrate that. You know, this version here has a little bit different wording, and sometimes they're helpful in the way it's understood. But in Ezekiel 39, 1-5, when he talks about this, I just thought this was interesting, that God would ever say this. I will smite thy bow out of thy left hand, and will cause thine arrows to fall out of thy right hand. Well, based on what Putin has said, and I think I got that followed up here, And a summary note, just before I get into that, maybe I'll finish that comment, because it's not obviously what is, it's not labeled in the summary. But Putin thought that he had all these new missiles and this new warfare that was going to come. God says, he gives the assurance to the person who knows their Bible, God will smite it out of his hands. So it doesn't matter how big the weapon is, it doesn't matter how fast it's going, it doesn't matter where it's going or how maneuverable it is, God says, I will disarm you. That's God's assurance to those who believe his book. God's identified, or Russia's identified in Bible prophecy. Its work is to group nations together to make the image of Daniel stand again. Russia is being moved by God to humble Israel, and it's getting very close. Russia is able to find holes in the defenses of the Western nations to work out its agenda. It will stand up against Yahweh and meet its end upon the mountains of Israel. So we'll leave it there. And in our next class, we'll try to show you how God will bring the nations of the world to the point. I'll be glad to see the Lord Jesus Christ for someone who has brings stability to this world. And for someone who we don't know of any person or any nation or any power that could collectively together disarm this world. Armament and the use of arms is so ingrained that it will take the Lord to do that. That's our next class.